Johnson with Kristen Bry. I am very excited for our next guest, who I've been following. I think we've been social media friends for a while now, but I've yet to meet you in person. First day meeting you in person. I'm so happy you're here. Judge Derek Mosley, who has been a judge in the municipal court in Milwaukee for over 20 years.
Over 20.
And we scheduled this interview before the big announcement happened. And so once the announcement happened, I was like, oh, well, now I know we're at least one of the topics we're going to talk about, which is that you are now going to be the director of the Lubar Center at Marquette Law School. And I want to get into that. But one of the I think this is so funny because since I moved back to Wisconsin during COVID, almost all of the relationships I was originally building were through social media, of trying to figure out who's who. And so this is what I know about you without having ever actually met you.
Oh, I'm excited.
So this is what I know. I know that you've been a judge for over 20 years. I know that you are a survivor, both of COVID and you had a kidney replacement prior to having COVID. I know that there is no better social media follow during Black History Month than you because of your daily posts with such fascinating people and stories. I also know that you're one of the most popular wedding officiants in the city of Milwaukee, and that had I not asked my brother, I probably would have asked you to marry me this summer.
That. Yeah.
And I know that you have a new job. So
we
have so much to talk about.
So much to talk about, yeah.
So let's start there. Let's start with the decision to hang up your robe, turn in your gavel, and go run a public policy civic
education
center.
Yeah. So, I've been in the system for 27 years.
Okay.
So I was a DA for 7 years in Milwaukee County, and then I became a judge and have been a judge for a little over 20 years. And so in those positions, as a prosecutor and as a judge, I always say this analogy. I was picking people downstream out of the river, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we do. We try to help victims, help defendants, try to get them into programs and things that they don't come back to the system. So I'm pulling people out of the river. And this new position now allows me to walk upstream and figure out, why the hell is everybody mm-hmm. falling in the river, right? And so I'm looking forward to this position to allow me to branch out a little bit more that I couldn't do as a judge. When you're a judge, you're under judicial ethics and you're impartial and you stay out of certain issues. And I really wanted to get more engaged with people in the community. So this is a perfect fit for me.
So quick side note, are you still going to be marrying people?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm still going to be marrying people. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, because that's the first thing I got when I, not hey, congratulations. I had all these brides emailing me. So we got to find a new officiant? I'm like, no, we're good. We're good.
You're like, if my brother could get it, you don't have to be a judge to marry people.
That's true. You don't.
You don't. At all.
No, not at all. But I am going to maintain reserve judge status for the purposes of officiating weddings.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay, so let's hear more about what the job is going to entail, or what the Lubar Center is.
Yeah, so it's the Lubar Center of Public Policy Research and Civic Education.
That's all 10 words. I kept trying to remember it by memory, and
yeah,
I was just butchering it.
It's tough. But so the basic focus is this. The reason why the center came about is because the benefactor, Sheldon Lubar, was getting sick and tired of people being in these camps. You're on one side, I'm on one side, and we weren't getting together and talking. And so he wanted to have this center where people could come in, speak their truths, defend their truths, and sort of be this town hall for Milwaukee. And that's how it all got started. And so the first person they had to direct the center was Mike Goucher. And so Mike Goucher, a famous journalist here in Milwaukee at TMJ4 for so long. And so he took it in the direction which was his strength, which is journalism, right? That's his strength.
Yeah.
And so what's interesting about me coming and taking over at this point is because my strength is I'm a lawyer, right?
Yeah.
And I was a judge and I'm connected to the community. So if we can meld all those together, then we think we have a pretty good recipe. So this Lubar Center is most famous for the thing that's going on right now, the elections. We run the Marquette Law School poll, which I'll have to give a shout out that poll was dead on accurate as to what happened last night.
Charles Franklin, man.
Dead on accurate, right?
538 coming for you.
and he's a wizard. And so so that's what we're most famous for. But what we also do is we do a fair share of on the issues type of things in the Lubar Center. So we'll bring in famous people who are located in the community that have an effect on things that are going on every day. And we allow the community to come in and ask questions, right? How often are you able to sit in a room and say, excuse me, Mr. Mayor, I have a question about, that doesn't happen, mm-hmm. right? And so we've become this place where that we allow that to happen. And then we also have the public policy piece where we're hoping to effectuate laws. And as a judge, that's something you can't do, right? We have separations yep. of powers, right? And so this now gives me an opportunity to do those things I've always wanted to do. Now, we have some laws that we can fix a little bit that will stop people getting into the system. And so if I have an ability to put that out to the legislature so they can hear about from my experience 28 years in the system, then so be it. So I am so excited about what we have in store.
And how much, because, you know, sometimes I think you think of Marquette University, which you are an alumni mm-hmm. of, and you went through for both undergrad and law school.
No, just for law
just
school.
Just for law school. Yeah. Okay. Yep. And, you know, it's this massive private university in downtown Milwaukee. And I guess as still a new resident of Milwaukee, I didn't think of it as accessible to the community. And so I didn't even know that this is not necessarily the Lubar Center being a part of the university. And when you go to law school, and this is part of like the curriculum of that, but that it's actually meant to be something that is open to anyone who not even just lives in Milwaukee, because you said some of your goal is not only as a civic education tool for people in Milwaukee, but for across the state.
Across the state, right. So here's the interesting part about Milwaukee in Marquette. Marquette is smack dab in the city of Milwaukee, right?
Yep.
Downtown, right there, right? Well, near West Side, right? Yet kids on campus and people who live around campus do very little intermingling with each other. So I know people who actually live a block or two off of campus and have never set foot on Marquette's campus. Hmm. Haven't gone into the library, haven't gone to the bookstore, haven't eaten on campus. They just don't, because they've had this image as if they really didn't fit or belong, right? And the one thing I noticed when I moved to Milwaukee and was going to Marquette is that Marquette students don't really know much outside of Marquette's campus.
Nope.
Right? Right? I mean, they may know Water Street or maybe Brady Street.
Right.
But when it comes to what's going on campus, they don't really know what's going on. And so my goal is to mold those two together, right? Say, hey, if you are a resident and you want to come in and see Marquette and have a seat and eat with family and or go to the library to look at resources or use computer labs to help you do resumes and things like that, so be it. And if you're a Marquette student, you want to go out into the community and learn more about the people who live in those neighborhoods and how you, as a student at a Jesuit university, mm-hmm. can help them in their everyday life, so be it. And for some reason, that hasn't really happened. And so I'm hoping to be that conduit between those two so that we can have that happen.
And it's interesting because, you know, sometimes I think at that age, sometimes being undergrad age, sometimes you're a little bit of a navel gazer. You're kind of mostly just about your life,
but like buried in your phone and you're walking to class
and your grades and stuff like that. But I think it is so interesting because, you know, often there's a lot of universities who are kind of like the up on the hill and separate. Right. And a lot of the universities, like the Ivy Leagues. And mm-hmm. and yet there's certain campuses, including Marquette, or even like if you think of USC or University of Chicago, where like you are. It's sometimes
you're in the mix.
Yeah. Like it is the city. It is not like there's not a big gate around Marquette that indicates you are now on Marquette's campus.
Right.
It is the public library is right there, and the Wisconsin Club's right there.
Yep.
And like you're in the city. Mm-hmm. And so, what do you feel like needs to happen to get students, sometimes who are from Wisconsin, but a lot who are not,
right.
because it is an elite university that people come from everywhere to go to. And so, what do you think can kind of encourage kids from at a younger age to start being more engaged in the community that they are living in for at least 4 years?
Yeah. So, what's unique about Marquette is that Marquette is a Jesuit university, and every kid who's going to Marquette was picked to go there, not just because they had the academic acumen to go there, but also because they met the Jesuit principles. Mm-hmm. And so Jesuits operate under this saying, cura personalis. And that means care for the whole person. And that's embedded in everything that happens at Marquette. And so I already have students that have that in their DNA. So now it's just a matter of how I can connect them to those types of resources. It's interesting. When you are a transplant, because I'm originally from Chicago. So, okay. when you're a transplant that comes to another city, you have to learn the city, mm-hmm. right? What I found when I was a student is that that didn't happen. If you were born and raised around Milwaukee, you knew Milwaukee tangentially, right? You knew, I'm going to go down to watch the Brewers play. I'm going to go to watch the Bucks. I'm going to go to Summerfest or to the beach and things of that nature. So I'm going to try to use that DNA that's already inside those students and pull them into areas that they probably weren't familiar with and how close they are to people who can really use their help. Mm-hmm. And so that's the key. I mean, I was guilty of it for a while. I just stayed on campus, didn't venture too far away. And but what made me realize is that when I got off of campus, I was like, there's a whole lot of people that look like me walking around, right? And I was like, I got to figure out what's going on here. And so that's what I'm trying to do with all the students. Because like you said, people come from everywhere. Yeah. But the vast majority of students come from the state. And they don't come from Milwaukee, right? They mm-hmm. come from outstate. And so I need to have those people introduced to what Milwaukee's all about.
Absolutely. And that is one of the things I definitely want to get into in the hour that you're here. But yeah. our guest for the hour is Judge Derek Mosley. And we're going to talk about a bunch of different things because you're also a huge foodie.
Yeah.
I would love, I want to hear stories about.
I'm liking
about,
you more and more.
Oh, you're going to really like me after that part.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to ask questions about how you pick your stories that you feature for Black History Month. But I think when we come back from our next, well, no, we still have 5 minutes. We still have 5 minutes. Never mind. I read the clock wrong. Oh. So I'll ask this now then.
Go ahead.
So as someone who was a transplant, because I talk about this a lot on the show as far as being a boomerang. I mm-hmm. left and I came back. Mm-hmm. And as we continue to approach Wisconsin and Milwaukee has a working age population declining problem.
Yeah.
And so as someone who could have easily just gone back to Chicago,
which was my goal.
Which was your goal.
Yeah.
So what was it about Milwaukee that made you get... because Marquette probably has the same thing as UW Madison, where you didn't have to take the bar because you graduated.
From yeah, correct.
Was that the
no,
bar?
That
like,
actually
I don't want to take the bar. I'll just practice here.
You know, that seems like the easiest answer, right? Just to say that. But that really wasn't the case. I took the Hiawatha. So the Hiawatha runs 8 trains.
So wonderful.
Oh, it's amazing. So every Friday after my last class, I would jump on the Hiawatha back to Chicago. So this is what happened. While I was working as a DA, I was meeting all these people who were coming up to me and asking me about different opportunities that they had. And I thought to myself, this is weird. And then older attorney, African-American, came up to me and said, in Chicago, I could throw a rock and hit 10 of you, right? 10 Black professional lawyers in Chicago. I could hit it and bounce off all 10 of you as I walked around. Here, I could shoot off a cannon and wouldn't hit anybody that was like you. And so he said, you need to stay here. And that really resonated with me. And it's really resonated with me when I became a judge at 31. Let me tell you what's never happening in Chicago, becoming a judge at 31.
Well, because
unless your name is Daly. My name is not Daly.
But we should acknowledge that you were the youngest Black appointed judge in Wisconsin history.
Yes. And that would have never, ever happened in Chicago. So for me, Milwaukee was the perfect fit because they embraced me right away.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal now is to get other, because you talked about the working age population. It's worse for African Americans because African Americans go to school here and then dip.
Yeah.
They go to Atlanta, Dallas, anywhere where they see more people that look like them in positions of power. But things are shifting, right? So for the first time in the history of Milwaukee, we have a Black mayor, Black county executive, Black sheriff, female, first female Black mm-hmm. sheriff ever, right? And so there's so many things, a first Latino common council president. I mean, Black and brown are starting to, you know, exert.
So I want to keep talking about that because we talked about it earlier as far as the election we just had, and what does that say about our state?
The election?
Yes, exactly. So our guest for this hour is Judge Derek Mosley. He will still be here when we come back. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Doesn't kill you, makes you.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this whole hour is Judge Derek Mosley. And so, as we were talking about before we went to break, there is a lot of new leadership in Milwaukee that are black and brown. And yet, year after year, Milwaukee is still high on the list for outcomes across the board, whether it's health, education, death rates, crime rates, is one of the worst places to be black in the country. And so this is probably a larger conversation that will last longer than this segment. But as far as, do you think that having leadership that is representative is one of the first steps to start curbing those outcomes?
Yeah, most definitely. So, you know, the mayor has only been in the position for, I don't even know, has it been 2 years? I don't even know how long it is.
No, it's been.
I think he was interim mayor starting in December.
It's been about a year.
Yeah, so this is not a lot of time he's been in. Same with David Crowley, county executive, hasn't happened. And, you know, we've had Sheriff Lucas, and then he turned it over to Sheriff Danita Ball, first African-American female sheriff. So I just think, and I can't forget about my brown brother, Perez, Jose Perez, on the Common Council president. But I just think now we can focus on things that are important to our communities, which really wasn't what was going on. I mean, if you looked at the city of Milwaukee, all of the development was going on downtown. All of the development. And so there wasn't much going on. So now you have the leader of the Department of City Development, Lafayette Crump, African-American. So what is he doing? He's starting to do all these developments out of downtown and into the neighborhoods where we need to make them more strong. So I think things are going to change, but you know, it takes time. I mean, it's been 148 years, right? So give us a little time.
Undoing, right? And like, I know we've had Ray Hill on the show before, and so they just, I think, announced all of the things that are going to be happening on MLK Drive, because I was living right over there. I used to live on MLK and Brown. Oh. And every time I would be on that part of MLK, again, similar to how even downtown Waukesha is with the, there's so many cute storefronts, but the difference is that those were empty.
Empty, correct.
And so now the intention and priority of getting those filled, I'm assuming with black-owned businesses, and thrive on MLK.
Can't wait for that.
Yes, that is what I mean, every time I drive by there, as far as the restoration that they're doing with the outside and how beautiful that's going to be. And so I think that is really encouraging to see. It's not just that the historic, because I think there's often like the historic, had the election gone 30,000 votes a different direction, we would have had our first black senator from Wisconsin. And it's always, you know, for those of us who like progress and believe that representation is important, it's those historic moments that feel big, but then it's also, what do you do with it?
Right.
And so seeing that you feel very confident in that the people who have been either appointed or elected into these positions are putting their money where their mouth is, and there's actually going to be, start to see changes, is very encouraging.
Yeah. So for me, I've seen it from the beginning to where we are right now. So prior to becoming a judge, I was a DA, and I started a program called the Community Prosecution Unit, in the sense where prosecutors were placed into neighborhoods. And so the neighborhood I had was Harambe. And Harambe and Brewers Hill are right up against each other. And so I saw it started with starting with a bid. You know, who would have thought you'd have a bid on MLK? So they started this downtown bid, and that's what got everybody involved. And now I'm on the board at Freighter, so we're all in on Thrive On. So there's, people are starting to understand. And the infrastructure is now there. So now it's just a matter of us putting those pieces together. And I think they're coming slowly. But once we get Thrive On up and running, oh my goodness. But you said you lived on King and Brown, right?
Yeah.
So have you been to Mi Casa Su Casa?
Yes,
oh
I
my
have.
Gosh.
Certainly I have.
The shrimp and grits.
That was like,
why
the,
did you say that?
Yes. That place is great. Pepper Pot. It had just opened basically as we were moving.
Arguably the best meat pies in the city.
Yeah, and so that, what else is right around there that, what's the cigar bar that's right in that neighborhood?
Oh, gosh. See, I don't smoke, so I would not attend
this. I don't really smoke either. I just know that it's, you know, when you're in a cigar bar.
Yeah, that's true.
Your clothes certainly know you're in a cigar bar.
But Sam's Place is not too far down there, the jazz club and breakfast place and lunch place. Yeah, it's, I've seen that neighborhood.
Miranda's plant shop. I just bought a plant there over the weekend.
You know, they're closing.
What?
Yeah, they just announced yesterday that they're closing up shop. I know, but they're still 414 Florals
right there. Are they closing
right
or are they moving?
No, they're
I thought they were doing so well.
Yeah, I don't think it was a matter of doing well. I just think they're tired.
Yeah.
You know? Also, why wouldn't you call the place 41 Floral?
Yeah.
Come on. That just seems like a lost opportunity right there.
You just gave someone a great idea.
No, we have 41 Floral.
There is a 41
yeah.
Floral.
Oh, okay, yeah. Cool. All right. Okay. Go.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Okay. Thank goodness. Yep. They're on the same block. They're also on King Drive.
All right. Yeah. So as far as what we were just talking about, and where do you feel like your position at the Lubar Center is going to be able to plug in to the different projects that are happening?
Yeah, so I'm trying to. So there's a whole bunch of things I'm trying to bring into the Lubar Center for younger folks, students, also younger than the students. So, for instance, I brought back a program last year called METAL. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's an acronym. It's Medicine, Engineering, Dentistry, Architecture, and Law. And the way the program works is we took middle school students and we introduced them to those five
practices,
I guess, is a good way to put it. And so Monday we started at the Medical College of Wisconsin. So they got white coats and they got to, you know, do rounds with the doctors, which is pretty amazing. You probably didn't know this, but when they're training doctors, they have these dummies that are almost like real. They blink, they talk. It's amazing. So the kids got to do that. Tuesday went to the MSOE for engineering. They made cars and had to drive them by with programming and coding. Dental school, D is the D at Marquette Dental School, so they got to learn how to fill a tooth. And then we had architecture, and we had architecture and trade. So we did MATC, and we did architecture because they do drafting and things of that nature, but also the trades are huge. And and then finally the law school, where we ended. And so I'm bringing that to the Lubar Center as well because it's part of that civic education.
Yeah.
And we're taking younger people and introducing them to Marquette at an early age because that was the problem we talked about. I told you, kids lived in that neighborhood and never stepped foot on the campus. So now you're coming to the campus to see what the campus is all about. We eat on campus, we go from the dental school to the law school, and it's just, yeah. So I'm plugging, we're going to be plugging people in everywhere.
I love it.
I can't tell you how excited I am.
You can tell. I can tell how excited you are. All right, well, we have to go to a break and do our top of the hour news, but Judge Derek Mosley will still be here when we come back. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Life. Always look on the light side of life.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry, our guest this hour. He's been here for a half hour. He's here for the next half hour is Judge Derek Mosley. And we've been talking about your new position at the Lubar Center at Marquette University Law School. And before you hang it up, I would like to talk to you more just because as we were talking about Milwaukee and some of our problems and also the image of Milwaukee. And as we've come out of this election cycle, and I think we all want to forget those political ads as quickly as we can, but crime being this, you know, the scare tactic, and that this is not to say that crime numbers are not up. They are. But no one has seen it besides police officers, DAs, public defenders, and the judges, right?
Correct.
And so when you, what is myth from reality as far as what gets peddled in it bleeds, it leads type like journalism versus what you see day to day?
Yeah. So the best way to put it is there's probably about, I don't know, 90, probably about 6% of the population in the city of Milwaukee commits crimes, right? So think about that. So that's 94% of the rest of the population are law-abiding citizens. But the problem is that 6% has the greatest PR machine in history, and that's your local news.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, you pick up the newspaper, you watch the news, and it's just that's all they talk about. And so, you know, it's funny. If you want to ask, the saying is, if you want to ask about a city, never talk to the cops. Right. Because all they see is the bad. So all they relate to is the bad. And so I haven't gotten jaded in any way. And I've always lived in Milwaukee. My entire Wisconsin living life has always been in the city. And I absolutely love it. And I love it because, well, I mean, I like the diversity. I like, you know, I like to eat. Right. So and what I love about Milwaukee is, you can change every day.
Yeah.
You can do Korean. You can do Ethiopian. You can do Chinese. You can do, I mean, it's amazing.
We
Middle Eastern,
spots.
Indie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sushi. I mean, it's crazy, the food scene here. And so all those people are coming together doing their thing. And what I also love about the city, and I don't think about crime in that way, like the way it was portrayed during these elections, it was like, I mean, so I go up, so all there's 250 municipal court judges, right? And they're all over the state. And I've probably done more goodwill for Milwaukee going to conferences than you could do as visit Milwaukee, right? Mm-hmm. Because up there, they think that, like, literally that you walk out of your house, you're going to get shot at. And so, and for them to have an interaction with someone who they would never, ever have interaction with, right? An African-American from Milwaukee, which is why.
Who's a judge.
Who's a judge, right? I got crazy stories about that. But what's so funny is that that's what I want to do with the Lubar Center, right? Mm-hmm. Have those conversations with people that you normally wouldn't have conversations with. And that's how we realize we have more in common than separates us, but also it makes us realize that they're good people who live here, who might maybe want to move out, but can't move out.
Yeah.
And so, I love it here.
I love it here too. And I think, you know, we're in a fortunate situation with Civic Media and all of our radio stations that we right now are airing in Richland Center and Oshkosh and soon to be Green Bay and Wisconsin Rapids and Wausau and Amory and Waukesha. And so one of, similar to what you just said, as far as the Lubar Center connecting those stories is, at least one of my goals with this show, because I have connections to Wisconsin Rapids. I live in Milwaukee. We do this show from Waukesha. And I feel like when you get out state, there is a huge divide. There is a lot of people who are like, well, that's Madison, that's Milwaukee.
Right.
And they think of it as a completely different part of the state that doesn't understand them and their lifestyle. And I just think that when you talk about schools, a lot of the rural schools have similar funding issues or similar problems. It's maybe not as complex as the MPS because it's not as big, but like families want the same thing.
Yeah.
And like there's so the broadband in rural areas and broadband in the middle of Milwaukee.
Totally different.
They're totally different, but there's still people who are struggling with both.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah.
So in like the more that we can tell stories and talk to people who are the executive director of the Cranberry Association, you know, or the ginseng farmer, but then also talk to you and talk to people in Milwaukee and like have people across the state hearing stories like this, I think, and bring us together as Wisconsinites and what's good for the whole state is certainly my goal.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like that's what your goal is.
That's totally my goal.
Together.
Right, right, right. And so, but there's also people here in Milwaukee who fear
totally
up north. They're like, oh, I'm not going up there.
I'm not going up there.
Yep. Yeah, you know, and so we can work together on that, you know, the same sort of issues. And so, yeah, I'm glad you brought up broadband. That's huge. I mean, it's a huge problem. That so we have that urban-rural issue with that divide. It's getting wider. Our black-white divide's getting wider. I saw a study that said that the schools in Wisconsin are as segregated as they were during Brown versus Board. Think about that. 1954. The schools are that segregated. We don't live in the same neighborhoods. We don't go to the same schools. And we somehow think that that next generation is going to get it. But that next generation was growing up the same way you grew up. And so if you don't interact.
They're growing up in the same systems.
Right.
So there's no change. I mean, one of the things with regard to like changing, you mentioned the statistic of 94 versus 6. One of the conversations could be had is even we talk about let's focus on that 6%. Just because it's a 6% that commits crime, it doesn't also mean that we forget them. We throw them away.
Right.
We judge them as irrevocable. Like they're people who can be helped, who can be taken up and done something with in society, but because of their situation doesn't mean they're terrible forever either. Right. Like that's,
well, and that's, I mean, I interviewed, Shannon Ross, who started the community, and seeing what they're doing as far as reentry programs and mm-hmm. shifting the narrative and everything. Like yep. I was at one of their dinners 2 weeks ago, and it was like, this is incredible as far as,
oh, they're killing it.
Well, they're killing it. Yeah. And so Jane, did you have a question?
I do though. Judge Mosley, again, yeah. talking about that 6% that is committing the vast majority of crimes in Milwaukee. So again, 94% are not, but there's been a lot of criticism about these 6% not getting sentenced to long enough sentences, that we have a justice system that is too lenient for these people. And I'm curious what kind of strictures you have to work within when you are sentencing someone. Can you address that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what I can tell you about my 28 years in the criminal justice system is that the criminal justice system is a pendulum. We can never get it right. We swing one way or we swing the other way. So when I first became a prosecutor, it was truth in sentencing. And so everybody went to jail, even for weed. Everybody was going mm-hmm. to jail. And so our prison population exploded, where we were sending people to other states. It was so big. And then instead of trying to self-correct to try to be more moderate in the way we addressed it, we swung the other way. And we said, we got to release everybody. Everybody's got to get out. We got too many people in jail. And so I'm hoping we get, and I think we're getting close to the point where we realize that there are people who deserve to be in prison, no doubt about it. But there's a lot of people that we could actually help in community settings, whether it's whether the halfway houses or whether it's community-based electronic monitoring and things of that nature. They don't have to be in the jail system. The problem is we just have to find that perfect medium of who goes where and where they go. But the problem is when you hear on the news all the time that this is going on, this is going on, this is going on, that tends to be the narrative. And that narrative isn't necessarily the reality of what's going on every day.
Well, and it's also, a couple weeks ago, we had, has Jessa Nicholson ever been in your court?
No.
She's a criminal defense attorney. I think she's based out of Madison, but she says she comes down here a fair amount. And we had her to come on to talk about cash bail. And one of the things she talked about, the amount of people who violate parole in one way, and how many of those are the people who are going back to jail, and often it's for reasons that they couldn't pay for rehab.
Right.
And so we're small. Now as a state going to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to house them in prison instead of help them pay for their rehab, which is part of their parole. And so it's things like that I think us as the who are outside of the system and just read the news don't understand that like there are other ways to help people who are desperate or addicts.
Yeah. Right? And so it got to the point where all of our treatment sources, so whether it was alcohol and drug treatment, mental health treatment, we were treating those individuals with prison. I remember when I first became a DA, someone told me that if you really want to help someone and give them their services, you got to recommend prison. That's where all the services are. And I'm like, are you serious? I mean, that's my option to get someone services? And so even though the funding for those services are still low, at least we're understanding treatment courts and putting people through those types of systems to help them recover as opposed to incarcerating. Because once they get out, they're still addicts. And so, yeah. So I'm so glad you talked about that bail piece, because I think a lot of people don't understand what bail is. And everybody thinks that if you commit a crime, you should have bail. And because we got it, you know, it's a serious crime, so you got to put you on bail or whatever it is. But, you know, bail is to ensure your appearance. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the purpose of bail, is to ensure your appearance and based on the severity of the offense that you committed.
And it became such a hot button issue in across the country. All they had to do is say, so-and-so doesn't believe in bail.
Right.
And that was it. They love crime.
Right.
They're going to give every criminal a gun.
Or the parole board. I mean, we operated under 12 years with no parole, right? So people were not receiving, served their sentences, have been upstanding members of the community and trying to petition, you know, Madison, could you please allow me to get this off of my record so I can continue to help and get grants? Because once you have that on your felonies on your record, you can't get money from the feds. You can't get a whole bunch of things. And it's just, I know at least five people. You mentioned one of them who have felonies on their record who are doing more good in this community than the people who are watching TV saying, oh, they should be in prison. And it's, It's sad. It's really, really sad.
It is sad. Well, we're going to take one more break.
Okay.
We got one more segment with Judge Derek Mosley. And I think, I don't know, I got to decide if we're going to go the direction of talking about Black History Month.
Sure.
Or some wedding stories.
We can do
maybe
it all.
Both. I got
all
of it. We'll see. All right. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene. Give the audience a grin. Enjoy. It's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life.
Come on, don't give up.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. We have one more segment with Judge Derek Mosley.
Let him stay long.
And I guess I want to, just because I feel like this is the best way for anyone who didn't know you before this interview and is listening right now, a big plug to go follow you on Facebook and Instagram. So when did the Black History Month daily post start?
Yeah. So my mom has always infused Black history. So I'm going to be honest. This was a guilt thing for me.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to be 100% honest. My mom told me when I was a kid about the Tulsa race riots, because my mom grew up in Tulsa.
Okay.
Okay. So I have family that went through all of that. And so I went to school and we didn't learn it. And I told her, I'm like, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. And she was like, it happened. And I'm like, I haven't learned it in school. It didn't happen. And I always carried that with me. And I wanted to make sure that my kids weren't having that same experience, right?
Yeah.
Where they weren't learning our history. And since it wasn't taught in the book, it didn't happen. And then when they had the 100-year anniversary and everybody's like, the Tulsa race riots, of course, I'm like, oh, my goodness. It just comes up all the time.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make sure my kids didn't have that experience. So that's why I started these posts. And it was really weird because I didn't know what people knew. So I thought, I assumed everybody knew Rosa Parks and Ruby Bridges and all these people. And they didn't. And so I was started by finding all these, like, not so familiar Black history facts. And that's how it got started. And then when I would mention someone like Ruby Bridges, everybody would be like, who's Ruby Bridges? And then when I say, well, that was the young girl who desegregated the schools in New Orleans. And they're like, oh, yeah. Remember Norman Rockwell painted a picture of her? They had the U.S. Marshals escort. Oh, I never knew her name. Mm-hmm. And then I say to them, you know, she's 67 years old.
I was just
going to
ask that. I was just going to comment on that.
Well, she's 67 years old. So this is what I tell people all the time. Harriet Tubman. Everybody knows Harriet Tubman, right? All right. So Harriet Tubman. When Harriet Tubman, so when the second president of the United States, so who was it? James Madison. When James Madison was president, Harriet Tubman was born. She was alive at the same time, right? When Harriet Tubman died, Ronald Reagan was alive.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that.
Wow.
Think how close that is, right? And so when people talk in terms of slavery, and like, oh, it's so long ago. And they're like, so I start every speech, Black History speech, with a picture of Harriet Tubman and a picture of Ronald Reagan, and say that these two people lived together. The 40th president all throughout the 80s.
Yeah.
Was alive when Harriet Tubman was alive. That's how close we are to this. But we talk about it. And so I try to, when I do my Black History posts, I try to find colorized photos of things you see in history. Because all of that happened in color. They keep these black and white photos. So we keep picturing this as, oh, it happened so long ago. It was black and white. So I have this full color photo of Harriet Tubman. in all of her glory. And it's just, I always start that as my target, my title page, because I want people to know this woman lived the same time as the 40th president of the United States, all during the 1980s. So we're not that far apart. So yeah, so I'm keeping pushing that stuff out because it's important for people to know. And now people were like, they're kind of pushing back. They're like,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Here, I'm going to ask a dumb question.
Yeah.
Why?
Right. Right. Well, because people, I say this. Here's another example. The best example. Do you remember when the Pearl Milling Company switched from Aunt Jemima to becoming the Pearl Milling Company?
Yes.
Right. Okay. A lot of people don't know that in the 1800s in vaudeville, these vaudeville acts, there was a character named Jemima, and she was portrayed by a white man in blackface and would have like a pillow under, and she would be this happy-go-lucky housemaid who would take care of the kids, and she'd get in all these little adventures, and Jemima became this derogatory term for black women. But we put it on a box of pancakes, right? And so, and finally people realized that we shouldn't be doing this anymore. People lost their minds. Mm-hmm. Remember, they lost their minds. And I don't fault them for losing their minds because they didn't know any better. I grew up with Aunt Jemima. That's great. That's all fine and dandy. But there's another side to that story that you might not be familiar with.
But the problem is, though, is like those individuals get all crazy about it. There's a portion of them who think themselves very open-minded, very progressive. And when you tell them that story, they then still push back because you're encroaching on their history. You're encroaching on their childhood, and they can't just understand it's a box of pancakes. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Doesn't
right.
matter.
Nope.
Doesn't matter. And that's the bigger, I don't want to say threat. It's the bigger problem than someone who's just a flat out racist. It's someone who's like, well, I voted for so-and-so. And then you're like, we're changing the name of the pancakes. What are you doing to my childhood?
Is that a black mermaid?
Oh, right. Yeah. Right.
Well, at least I have my Uncle Ben's right.
No, you don't even have that anymore. Uncle Ben's is gone. But here's the thing. It's been this shift in our whole culture. We used to listen to understand. Now we listen to respond.
Yeah.
Right? And so as soon as you say something, as you're talking, you can see people, they just start getting ready to respond. I'm like, this is not what it's all about. Listen to what I have to say.
We're learning that through the 24-hour news cycle. When,
yeah.
when you watch those panels of, you know, eight people, and you just see the main person's talking, you just start to see the and you're like, oh, we're about to argue. Argument's about to happen. I took a class on listening in college. And the percentage that you don't listen to is amazing because you're thinking of your response.
Yep.
Do you have to leave or do you want to stick around?
What time is it?
It's 1:27.
Yeah, I probably should be
all right.
Back.
All right. Well, you already gave us an hour of your time. So thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
We will definitely have you back because it feels like we only scratched the surface of all the different things
we could
talk
about.
Can
you bring it back when I'm here?
Sure. We'll bring you back when Greg's here. We'll bring you back on a Wednesday because we'll definitely want an update on the new job when you start in January.
Yeah, let's come back.
I know. Absolutely. All right.
Do you get to take your gavel with you?
I was going to ask, do you get to bring your robe home?
Yeah, remember, I'm still doing weddings. So.
Still doing weddings.
I had to buy that room. No one pays. I bought that.
All right. Judge Derek Mosley, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. We're going to take a break. Stay with us. This is Ask Goes Wisconsin.
Act like there's one last day, and you don't have to ask, because you know I'm going to say, make it one more round. Yeah, one more round. Until we